Where warp meets weft. Where warp meets weft. This is Weavecast with Sine Mitchell.
Hello, and welcome to Weavecast, episode 39, Weave a Real Piece. This episode, we travel to an organizational meeting for Weave a Real Piece. This is an organization that provides networking for folks who are on the ground in developing countries working with local artisans to help preserve their craft. We'll hear stories from several of the participants describing their work all over the world. Then, in closing today's audio essay, we hear a tale of weaving misadventure from Janet Dawson in Nova Scotia. We have a surprise musical guest this episode. Liz Gibson of Interweave Press will be singing an original song. So lots of fun today. Stay tuned. Our sponsor this episode is Cotton Clouds. For 30 years, they've been bringing you some of the finest cotton yarns available over the internet and mail order. You can check them out at www.cottonclouds.com. I don't have a lot of news from the weaving world this episode. I think most people are outside enjoying the sunshine. But I will give an update on the Tree Leaves project. It has been completed, and if you'd like to go see how the final tree turned out, we'll have a link to that on the show notes. In my own weaving life, I am currently playing around with summer and winter for the first time. I'm plotting out a pattern in my weaving software to weave words. It's something that I've wanted to do since forever because having a writing background and now an interest in weaving, it just makes sense to bring the two together. But until I had my new loom with all the extra shafts, there really wasn't a lot I could do in summer and winter. On a 4-shaft loom, it's pretty blocky. 8-shaft is a little bit better, but I wanted to do something a little bit more involved. And so I'm slowly working through that, kind of in a laborious fashion. And I'm sure there's a faster way to design summer and winter. Right now, I'm just enjoying the meticulous method of putting in all the tie-down picks, because it's really kind of drilling the weave structure into my head. If people have design tips for how to design faster, please use the audio comment feature that's up on the new site. If you click on Listen to Weavecast Audio, one of the submenus that appear says leave an audio comment, and I would love some advice for designing in summer and winter, since I'm quite new at it. The warp interviews for this episode were edited by Nancy Smith Kilkenny. When I attended the conference, I wandered around and took a bunch of random little snippets of audio, and I think she's just done a wonderful job of bringing it all together and putting it into a cohesive story. So thank you, Nancy, for all your hard work. Without further ado, here is some music to get us in the mood for Weave a Real Piece.
Every day I wake up in my bed just to see who else lost their head. So much hate, so much confusion. Can't tell who's winning, you can't tell who's losing. Can't have peace, can't have peace if you don't show mercy. If you don't show mercy, you can't have peace. You can't have peace if you don't show mercy. If you don't show mercy. Now I fest on dying every day. It seems our policies are getting in the way. How do you fight what people call religion. Why should I care as long as it's not in my region? Can't have peace, you can't have peace. If you don't show mercy, if you don't show mercy, you can't have peace, you can't have peace. If you don't show mercy, if you don't show mercy. When the oil companies say it, that's right, we jump. Somebody's making money, and I know it isn't me. Is this what they mean, that it costs to be free? You can't have peace, you can't have peace. If you don't show mercy, if you don't show mercy. You can't have peace, you can't have peace. If you don't show mercy, you don't show mercy. Not tonight, when you go to bed, just be glad that you still have your head. Pray to God that there is a higher power, protect us all from that nuclear shower. Can't have peace, you can't have peace. If you don't show mercy, if you don't show mercy. You can't have peace, you can't have peace. If you don't show mercy, if you don't show mercy, you can't have peace, you can't have peace. If you don't show mercy, if you don't show mercy, you can't have peace, you can't have peace. If you don't show mercy, if you don't show mercy, listen to me. If you don't show mercy, you can't have peace. You can't have peace. If you don't show mercy, if you don't show mercy, you can't have peace. You can't have peace.
Last April, I got invited to attend the Weave a Real Peace conference that was going on Whidbey Island in Washington. And my first question when I got the invite was, what is WARP? Because it was an organization I'd never heard anything about. The organizers who were inviting me said, well, come, talk to us and find out. So I did. The meeting took place at Camp Casey on Whidbey Island. It was a cloudy, overcast day, and you could hear seagulls in the background. And there was a little bit of rain off and on, and I walked through this campground to a large meeting house, just a one-room house, that was filled with some very interesting individuals. And there were tables in the back of textiles they'd collected from their travels all over the world and just represented any indigenous textile tradition you could imagine. One of the most interesting things about being involved in hand weaving is knowing that when you're weaving, you're engaging in a craft that is as old as humanity. Weaving has been a part of nearly every culture all over the world. Textile traditions, having developed over these tens of thousands of years, are very varied in the way they approach design and technique and color. And what's sad is that in today's mechanized world, a lot of these hand-manipulated techniques are falling away and not being learned. And the artisans who are developing these beautiful handcrafted items aren't getting paid a fair wage. But during my time at Camp Casey, I've discovered that there is a group of people who are dedicated to preserving these traditional crafts and helping artisans in developing countries get paid what their work is worth. To find out what WARP is really all about, I started with board member Linda Temple. She took a few moments away from her work on the conference to talk to me a bit about WARP's history and its mission.
WARP was founded in 1992 by a group of primarily weavers who were working with textile artisans in developing countries. There were a number of us who were very involved working in different parts of the world and had become friends over distances, obviously, and thought, you know, it'd be great to have a meeting of all these people that are doing this kind of thing so we can network and talk to each other and find out what's working and what isn't working as far as raising awareness of textile techniques that are trying to be sustained by local communities and local traditions. We decided to have a meeting, which we did in 1992 in Colorado. Deborah Chandler was one of the leaders in this process. Got together and decided, well, we'd really maybe want to get together more than once. We started a newsletter, and which is a quarterly newsletter now. WARP's mission is to serve as a catalyst in supporting textile artisans, providing a communication device between textile artisans in developing countries and in people who would like to support them in this country to perpetuate the importance of textile traditions and textile cultures.
Susan Schaefer Davis has been a member of WARP for many years. She's currently working with Moroccan rug weavers to help them get their rug designs out to a wider market.
I'm an anthropologist by training, and I work with women weavers in Morocco. I work on economic development in general, and I've seen a lot of women's projects where they think of things they can produce to earn money, but they don't have a market. I also love Moroccan rugs, and I put those two things together and thought, here are these weavers who often help support their families without a good market. So I decided to try and put the rugs on the internet to see if they would sell, and that's what I do. I work with a representative in each village. The illiterate women weavers bring their rugs, set a price they want. I add shipping and handling. The rugs live in the village until someone orders them off the internet. I put them on the internet with a bio of the woman and a photograph with her permission. So if people buy a rug, they can see exactly who made it. So it helps the women get better prices than they would to a middleman in Morocco. It gives them a worldwide market, and it lets people in the rest of the world learn a little bit about Morocco and Moroccan women and have access to their beautiful rugs.
What are some of the changes that have happened in these women's lives because of this project?
I would love to do real research on that because I'm an anthropologist. I just have anecdotal information. But one woman said she'd like to travel. After she sold a rug, she took a trip. Her husband wouldn't let her before. I thought it was Muslim culture. She's locked up. My specialty is Muslim women. And they're not like that at all. I was glad to see that was not the case. He was too cheap to buy her a bus ticket. So when she had sold the rug and got some money, she got her own bus ticket and went to visit her daughter. The same lady, actually, her village got electricity recently, so she bought a blender. Other women say it allows them to pay for school books for their kids, for visits to the doctor. Some women have said their families are a little more relaxed now. It's not so tight about, is there money for the books this year for the school kids? And not all the women get money. That's the change that's coming, and that was very interesting to see. I also write about empowering women, and how do they get empowered? I wanted the women to get a share of the money for their rugs, but I knew I couldn't say to the men, give them the money. One, they probably wouldn't. Two, I'd make them angry. Three, it's not my business to rearrange the culture that way. So what did we do? A wise Moroccan woman I worked with said, ask the ladies how to do this. And a wise older lady said, how about we tell the men that if we get a little something when we finish a rug, we'd probably finish the next one faster. Dun! you know, terrific. And then I asked at a future meeting how many women had tried that, and several had. So little by little, more of them are getting some of the money from their own rugs. I work in two villages, and again, so you want people don't get a biased view of Morocco. In the northern village, the women sell their own rugs and use the money as they wish. The south, the women are more isolated. They're sort of at an earlier stage of development, less educated, and so it's hard for them to go into town and sell the things themselves. So the men have more control there than they do in the north. And those things are changing in Morocco. And this is probably one thing that can help that change.
Helping women in another part of Western Africa is a passion for board member Sarah Solson, who's been a professional weaver for 20 years. She got involved with a group from Ghana just as she was preparing to take a sabbatical from her studio in Syracuse, New York. She was packing to leave for New Orleans when a chance meeting launched her interest.
I wanted to find a way to blend what I loved about anthropology as a college student with my life that emerged as an adult as a professional weaver, and I wanted to bring the two together. So I kind of felt like I was a weaver in search of a project, and that was why I joined WARP. I was hoping to keep my ear to the ground and find some group somewhere to whom I could be useful. A few months before I was moving to Louisiana, this wonderful woman from Ghana walked into my studio who needed reeds to take back to Africa. It was this wonderful synergy of a number of things coming together at one time. And so I developed a relationship with this woman and a weaving apprenticeship program in northern Ghana that she was supporting. And my relationship with that grew, and at the same time, so did my involvement in WARP. When I went to Ghana 3 years ago to work with the weaving apprenticeship program that I had become connected with, one of the things that the teacher of the apprenticeship program wanted was what they call a wide loom, which is what we would call a regular four-shaft floor loom, about 40 inches wide. And an anonymous member of WARP donated the funds for this loom to be purchased. And it was actually purchased while I was there. And I have a really wonderful photograph of the apprenticeship weavers carrying it across the yard in front of the building where the apprenticeship program was and up the stairs into the studio. After that, it turned out that this apprenticeship program had a number of small looms. They're about 20 inches wide. Two-shaft counterbalance looms they did most of their weaving on. Those are easy to get. They're made locally. But the one thing that's really hard to get in Africa is reeds. And I later learned there's only two factories in the entire African continent that make reeds. One is in Egypt, and the other is in South Africa. As a consequence, they're expensive in Ghana, which is in West Africa. After I came back, I started soliciting 18-dent reeds, which is what they needed. They actually weave cloth at 72 ends per inch, 4 ends per dent in an 18-dent reed. And WARP members from all over the country kept sending me 18-dent reeds. And every time anyone from Syracuse went to northern Ghana, they took 18-dent reeds with them. I feel that there's a special connection when weavers meet. I'm reminded of Linda Ligon, who said that she feels craft can become the vehicle for developed world and developing world craftspeople to meet as equals. I really experienced that myself in a very real way when I went to this small town in northern Ghana to spend a week with apprentice weavers. This is a town where only the town center has electricity. Each outlying village has one well for the entire village. The weaving apprenticeship program where I was working was in a building with one well, no plumbing, no electricity. The material differences between them and how I usually live are vast. And yet when I was there, they wanted to know very specific things from me. They wanted to know how they were going to weave patterns on this new four-shaft floor loom that had been donated. So I showed the main teacher how to read drafts so I could send her a book like Marguerite Porter Davidson's and look at those drafts and use them. They wove a lot of head wraps. And one of the things they really loved about some of the scarves that I'd woven and brought for them to see was they love what we all love in this country, plied fringes. And so they wanted to learn how to do that. I felt that when I was working with them, even though I was showing them a technique that I knew, that I was showing it to an equal because they wanted to have that skill for the same reason that I wanted to have it. And so that we were, despite these vast differences between their world in northern Ghana and my world on the east coast of the United States, that what was really joining us was this really passionate commitment to knowing a lot of the same skills for very similar reasons. I feel that weaving very much breaks down barriers. I experienced that myself in a very, very real and powerful, powerful way.
My name is Felipe Gonzalez, and I'm associated with Warp because of my wife, Maria. She's a weaver from Guatemala, and she was interested in connecting with other weavers up here in the United States. We support many weaving families in Guatemala. We have a small business, and we're members of the Fair Trade Federation. So we work with them. We try to market their weavings up here or transform them into marketable products up here in North America. Warp for us has been a benefit in the sense that we're able to connect with different people that are doing different things related to weaving. And since weaving is the foundation of the Mayan culture, a lot of the weavers that are in Warp have also been to Guatemala and identify with their work down there. So we've been able to connect with different people that helps our business and also directly helps the weavers in Guatemala. That's been very positive. We work with about 40 different families. We keep kind of a profile on them. So we've noticed that over the years that families that we've been working with, they've been able to continuously send their children to school. And education is a really big thing in Guatemala, that parents want their kids to be educated. A lot of the artisans, they depend on that steady income. We do two big orders a year, so that helps with basically surviving for several months, and then they're able to hire their folks to work with. It lets them be able to continue doing the work that they're doing, which is either weaving or some of the other traditional arts, like with woodwork or beadwork, or just maintain some of the traditional arts in Guatemala.
My name is Liz Gibson, and my company is a member of Warp. I joined Warp as a college student when I was about 20, and it's just an inspirational organization.
So what do you think is the most important thing that Warp does?
It's sharing information. The people on the ground who are doing this work, which is working with largely women in community who are working with craft as a way to feed their families. Those of us who are interested in being a part of that process have a lot of information. And we go in as individuals and we're so passionate and we tend to face the same challenges and the same things over and over again. So learning by experience and sharing that information. I think Warp is so unique as a really pure networking organization that shares those experiences and to make them better and to make projects work better.
What are some collaborations that you've seen come out of Warp?
This teaching of tension boxes down in Guatemala. This is Sarah Goodman, I believe that's her name. And she worked with Deb Chandler, the founder. You know, there are issues with getting long warps onto backstrap looms. A tension box could solve issues. And so to have basically a Western weaver come down and teach a new technique that was really effective in the field. And not only that, but how eagerly they latched on to the fact that this could make their jobs easier or work better, and then also immediately saw improvements. That was a good collaboration to me because you see guilds, the equipment got donated in a heartbeat. The skills went down there. It will help with the production weaving, and it's innovating. One of the things that really bogs us down in the work that we do, it's an important dialogue, but it gets bogged down, like how much do you introduce innovation to new cultures? And my experience in working with other cultures is that they want to innovate. If it's not appropriate, they won't use it. That's what appropriate technology is this stuff that gets used.
What are some of the challenges that people doing projects that have evolved from warp are facing?
Connecting to markets. I mean, having product and bringing it to market in a way that's appropriate. I'd really love to see more emphasis on building local markets, tourist markets for people that are coming to them. That's an issue. But really connecting to people who want to buy the product and making that happen. There's lots of technical problems on the ground, but marketing is just such a kicker. What do you make? How do you make it? How do you get it to market? How do you keep the appropriate flow going?
What do you think is in the future for Warp?
Well, I hope a lot more networking as provided by things like internet communication. Warp is such an underappreciated asset in terms of the NGO community. I just so love its grassroots expertise. And I'd love to see Warp members more active on forums at that level and sharing their information. And I think Warp, just like guilds, just like organizations that run on people power, will just continue to do what it does, which is pretty darn unique.
I left the Warp conference impressed by the passion and dedication that these people bring to the work that they do. Whether it was leading tours, helping African women sell online, importing fair trade goods, classes, outreach, each one was quietly changing the world. If you're interested in learning about how to help others with your weaving, whether it be at home with underprivileged kids or people with special needs, or if it's in developing countries, attending a Warp meeting is a wonderful way to meet other people who are interested in doing that same kind of work. Warp is not an organization that organizes any particular project. What it is a way for grassroots folks, each working in their own separate paths, to come together, exchange information, and get revitalized with new ideas on how they can help make the world a better place. And if that's something that you're interested in, go find out more about Weave a Real Peace. It's an organization that's weaving the world together, one changed life at a time. For more information about Warp and some of the projects run by the people we interviewed, please go check the show notes. They always say end on a song, so we're going to close out the Warp interview with a song from Liz Gibson. Now, Liz Gibson is the managing editor for Handwoven, and she does a lot of work at Interweave Press. But I never knew that she was a talented singer-songwriter. In her youth, she worked on a Navajo reservation, and this song tells the story of a woman who was being relocated. Her home was in the path of a fence line that was going through. This was a small elderly woman who had lived in her home probably all of her life, and she couldn't understand why they would want her to move. So workmen came and told her she had to move, and they brought in all this barbed wire fencing, and they explained the plan, and they went home that night. And when they came back the next day, she had wrapped the barbed wire fencing all around her home. And in the face of such determination, they let her stay. And I will warn you about the audio of the song. Microphones are a lot like golf clubs in that you need a different mic to record close up than you do at a distance. And so when I recorded this, I was using a microphone that's designed to be held an inch away from your mouth. But of course, I was sitting in the audience, and just on a whim, I turned on my mic. I didn't really think it would pick up anything, but lo and behold, I got enough sound that I think it's worth a listen. And it was a really beautiful moment at Warp. It kind of pulled together for me the entire Warp experience. The music is a little rough. The presentation isn't 100% polished, but it has so much heart and good intention that it just rises above its humble origins and becomes something really wonderful. Without further ado, here is Liz Gibson. I don't know if the song has a name, but I like to think of it as May's song.
Wanted to take her home away, and you wanted her to leave this place. Living on the land is no good, you say. We're gonna find you a better way. I can hear words echoing, strong and true and proud. No, you can't have my home. No, you can't have this land. Forever I will stay. Forever I will stand, I will not go away. One man was not enough, so he came with 100 more. Find a tall, strong woman standing at her door. My home I have covered in barbed wire steel. Though you are an army, you may never go in here. And no, you can't have my home. No, you can't have this land. Forever I will stay. Forever.
In previous episodes, I've talked about how I would love to have more listener participation. So I was just thrilled when Janet Dawson stepped up to the plate and shared one of her stories from her weaving life. If you've got a great story, I would love to hear it. Because WeaveCast is about telling all weaver stories, not just the people who are teachers and who write books.
Hi, Sign and WeaveCast listeners. Janet Dawson in Sydney, Nova Scotia here. I just started listening to WeaveCast a couple months ago and have been working my way through the old podcast in order. Last night I listened to episode 9, which was the Halloween episode, which included the interview with Bonnie Tarsis and the weaving horror stories. I know it's way past due, but Matt's story reminded me of my own earliest horror story, so I thought I'd share it with you. It happened, like so many do, on my very first warp. My grandmother was the only weaver in our family at that time, so I decided to make her a 30-inch wide shawl in brushed mohair, not realizing that brushed mohair is not the friendliest of fibers to work with. We warped our looms from front to back in the class I was taking, which only compounded the problem. The mohair stuck to itself in the leaf sticks, in the reed, in the heddles. It was a nightmare. It took most of the 8-week term just to get the warp onto the loom. I was ready to give up lots of times, but my teacher, bless her heart, had far more patience than I, and helped me plug away at it and get the warp onto the loom an inch or two at a time. As frustrating as the mohair was, though, it is not the horror part of my story. Once I started to weave, I absolutely loved my shawl, and realized that the brush mohair was great in one respect. All that hair covered a multitude of sins, like treadling errors, threading mistakes, skipped threads, you name it. As I got near the end of the shawl, though, the tension on the left side got looser and looser and looser. Not knowing much about looms or weaving, I chalked the tension problems up to the difficulty we'd had winding on, but even to my untrained eye, it seemed pretty dramatic. And then I advanced the warp one more time, and the back beam fell off the loom. Not the whole beam, just the left end, fell out of the loom's frame and hung there, dangling from my warp. This was, as you may appreciate, rather alarming. It was horrifying, even. I was weaving on my own outside of class, so there was no one else to run to for help. I sat there for a bit and scratched my head. I may even have whimpered. Eventually, though, I got up and lifted the beam back into the frame, fastened the bolts that had obviously come loose, and I just kept on weaving. Needless to say, the tension was rather unorthodox after that point, but that lovely brushed mohair covered it up, so the tension problems were nearly invisible. I managed to finish weaving my shawl and give it to my grandma, who loved it just as much as I did. So my weaving horror story, like that, ends well and proves what Bonnie said in her interview. There are very few problems that happen while weaving that can't be fixed. And yet, there is a horrifying postscript for the shawl itself. My grandmother eventually moved into a group home and took the shawl with her. One day it needed to be washed, and the folks running the home apparently didn't know how to launder a hand-woven mohair shawl, because they put it through the washer and the dryer. It came out about a foot wide, about 2 feet long, and nothing at all like a rectangle. All the weird tension differences in the warp turned it into a felted, wiggly, wobbly mess. I found it years later, hiding at the back of a high shelf in my mother's closet. She hadn't had the heart to throw it away, but didn't want me to ever find it. It didn't really matter that much to me, because Grandma had loved it and used it almost as long as she was able. But it was a kind of unfortunate end for what at one time had been a lovely shawl, and what was, after all, my very first weaving project. So there you have it, my earliest weaving horror story. Thanks for listening.
Now, I have to say, in closing on this story, Janet's mom is actually a member of the same Seattle Weavers Guild that I am. And at our last meeting, she actually brought the shawl in so I could take a look at it. And there is a picture of it up on the show notes. I never got to see the original, but I kind of like the felted version. I mean, sure, it's sturdy and the edges are kind of ruffled. It's really a rather beautiful effect. It reminds me of nudibranchs I used to see when I would snorkel in Key West, how their edges kind of rippled. And the blue color of the mohair was simply stunning. So I guess even weaving misadventures can be beautiful if you look at them with fresh eyes.
It doesn't matter about your color or your creed. It doesn't matter which religion you believe. It doesn't matter if you're rich or if you're poor, whether you're a politician or one who fights the war. It really makes no difference what country you are from. Nobody wants to lose their daughter or their son. Take a moment of silence, say a prayer for everyone. It's time to stop the violence, lay down the guns and sing peace around the world. send peace around the world. Peace is coming to us all. Love is universal, and music is the voice. Everyone can live in peace if we all make the choice to love. Worth fighting for. Nothing's worth the taking of another person's life when it's love we should be making to end the world's strife. The day will come when everyone will live in harmony and celebrate the brotherhood of all humanity. Divided we will fail, together we'll achieve it. But before it can happen, we've all got to believe it. Peace around the world. Peace around the world. Peace is coming. Peace is coming. Peace is coming to us all. Peace is coming to us all.
WeaveCast is brought to you through the generosity of our donating listeners. This episode, I'd like to thank Jody, Inga, Gina, Virginia, Margot, and Angela. Thank you for helping make the show possible. Our sponsor this episode is Cotton Clouds. For 30 years, they've been bringing you some of the finest cotton yarns available over the internet and mail order. You can check them out at www.cottonclouds.com. Audio production and editing for the Warp interview was done by Nancy Smith Kilkenny. Our musical guests this episode included Liz Gibson from Interweave Press. Thank you, Liz, for giving me permission to play your song on the show. Terry Prong's song, Can't Have Peace. Mado Project with Peace was our ambient music for the Warp interview. And Freedom People, Peace Around the World closed out this episode.